Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Robert Bound, and as you will all be too aware, Monday is our day for art. And joining me in the studio today to lend her expertise to the subject is commissioning editor for the Times Arts, Nancy Durrant. Coming up in the programme, we have Van Gogh's Missing Ear and the life of Cuban artist Wilfredo Lam. Nancy, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
We're going first to a bit of a, this is a really interesting one. It's called the Veronica Scanner. It's happening here in London at the Royal Academy. Now, this is an interesting idea for the show. Talk us through it. And talk us through actually where you saw this process first.
Well, so what it is, it's a scanner. The Veronica scanner is literally like a pod with holes in it, which you sit in and are scanned, which sounds terrifying, but actually is quite...
All of you?
No, just your sort of bust, as it were, in an artistic sense, rather than in other kind of sense. So I went to Madrid, which is where there's a company called Factum Arte, who make stuff for artists. They do work for Anish Kapoor, they do work for Marina Abramovich, for all kinds of people. And they have essentially invented this thing. It's not a new technology. It's called photogrammetry, which is basically measuring with photographs. But what they've done is created a version of it, which is more or less portable, i.e. not absolutely massive, and can be done very quickly and relatively cheaply. Normally it's very expensive. So you go into this pod and they sort of close it on you. And then
what's that like? Is that a little bit, you get a little claustro, or are you okay?
It's actually not that bad.
You can wiggle your legs around.
I mean, there's plenty of room to move around, except you must not move around, because if you do, then you're going to come out really weird. So you sit there and then they scan you, and it takes 4 seconds. They've got this kind of arm that goes round with sort of, I think, something like 85 cameras on it, and it scans you in 4 seconds, and then the file is downloaded, and there you are in a kind of 3D perfect image on the screen. And when I say perfect, I mean every little wrinkle, every eyelash, every out of place bit of your hair, everything. It's amazing. It is so, so high res.
It's presumably quite a strange thing. You know that thing when you are in a hotel with lots of mirrors, maybe you have this set up in your bathroom, your dressing room, I don't know, Nancy, that thing where you sort of catch the side of your face or the back of, you go, oh, I didn't realise it like that.
Exactly.
You have to rearrange your hair.
You're basically seeing, unlike in a mirror, you're seeing yourself as everybody else sees you, because it's not flipped. Mm. And it's a really, particularly when they then 3D print it, it's really weird. It's a really strange kind of uncanny experience. And I think it's quite interesting that the RA is doing this. So they brought the Veronica scanner over to Britain, and they're going to go from the RA to Waddesdon Manor, because it's being partly funded by the Rothschild Foundation, and that's their base. It's quite an interesting thing, I think, because obviously the one thing that's missing in this whole process is an artist.
I was going to say, what are the artistic implications of this? Because obviously, you know, the RA still has a very famous life drawing studio there. This is doing the job of what we should expect artists to be doing, and doing, if imperfectly, at least interestingly and with interpretation. So what does this add to it? Have we reached the end of something in terms of portraiture
it's
when we get to this?
It's the end of sculpture.
No, I don't think it is.
that's what I wanted you to say.
Great, we're done. I think it's really interesting. On one part, of course, it's great for artists because it's an astonishing technology that I'm sure that people with much kind of more creative brains than me would be able to do incredibly interesting things with. The other thing is that if you're the kind of person, I think, who's going to commission a portrait of yourself of any kind, sculptural or photographic or painted, part of what you're commissioning is not just the image of yourself. It's also the talent and kudos of the artist. And it's also the sort of the hope that what that artist will do is capture something of your essence.
Yeah.
Which this, although it's exactly the same, I mean, exactly the same, can't do anything. It can't tell you anything about who you are.
And you want people, it's been like being talked about by someone else. You want to overhear someone singing your praises or something. You want the little bits of you that you maybe offer up to the world as caricature to be appreciated as such. So when you see stark reality, well, what did you think when you had yourself scanned?
I mean, first of all, my reaction was, oh my God, that's so cool. But also, the other
Nancy
thing
Durrant,
was...
13 and three quarters there from London.
But the
Thanks
other
for writing
thing,
in.
The other thing was, I think it was a bit of a surprise to see, for me, the kind of imperfections of my face reproduced so kind of baldly and perfectly. And it was just a bit, actually, what was interesting about it was that I have a hole in my forehead and nobody ever notices it.
Right.
And I pointed it out on the thing and now everybody's like, oh my God, really? You have a hole in your forehead. That's extraordinary. So it's a sort of, it's quite nice. In a way, it was quite nice to know that no one had noticed it before.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, in all these years, yeah, no one had ever noticed. It's an interesting thing. I suppose this sets up many an interesting sort of debate in the newspapers, including your own. And presumably, most importantly, amongst the people that the punters that go and see this. And are scanned and what actually, before we move on to the next exhibition, Nancy, what do you leave with? Do you...
Well, if you don't leave with a lot.
No.
when you go in, that I think, to be honest, I think in the Royal Academy certainly all of the slots have been booked up for weeks because everyone's so excited about this. But so what happens is you're scanned and the digital file is created and cleaned up and then that is made available in a database. I don't know whether it's 100% publicly or whether it's just to the people who have been scanned. And if you want to, you can then download that file and send it to a 3D printing place and have the damn thing done in gold if you want to. But there are a number of people, members of the public, who will randomly be printed for the exhibition. And so their heads will go alongside the great and the good, such as myself, and Jacob Rothschild and Nicholas Osgdale and people like that.
Nice. Okay, well, it's an interesting one. It's the Veronica Scanner. It's just finished its stint at the Royal Academy. And as Nancy said, it'll be gearing up for some more bust-making action at Waddesdon Manor in Buckinghamshire. And that's going to kick off on the 22nd of October. Now we're just hopping over the channel and we're going to Amsterdam, Nancy. This is another Van Gogh show. It's called On the Verge of Insanity.
Indeed.
Van Gogh, Insanity. What on earth can we glean from this as possibly new?
Well, it's a good question, but I've already got
this is the end of portraiture out of you. This is an amazing afternoon's work.
But it's a beautiful, of course, because it's mostly Van Gogh works, exhibition. And it is quite insightful and in many ways quite moving. I mean, of course, we've always known that he shot himself and that it was a terrible tragedy and all of that. But what's nice about this is that they've taken all of the scholarship that has ever been done on what might conceivably have been wrong with Van Gogh. And they've kind of listed it all and tried to sort of find a way through it and figure out what might have happened, but also just to kind of, I think actually the message of the exhibition is more, he wasn't a crazed visionary making these sort of intense paintings through madness. He was making incredibly well thought out, beautifully composed, brilliantly executed paintings, despite the fact that he was extremely ill. So that, I think, is a kind of, it's just a sort of flip of looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, he was a pioneer and the paintings are beautiful. As you say, the mania, you know, existed probably after he'd put down his paints and his easel, and that was stuff that and who knows whether the painting of these beautiful pictures was some sort of therapy or not, but it certainly didn't seem like he was operating his paintbrush under the influence of craziness.
No, right? Absolutely not. Yeah. There's no way that you could make
people love
something...
to think that though, don't they?
Of course,
because
they do.
It's the tortured artist.
They love that. They absolutely love that idea. But actually, if you're really tortured and completely insane, then you really generally don't make good art, because good art is not just beautiful and full of vigour and expression. It's also very, very rigorous, particularly when it comes to painting.
And hard work. And I mean,
also, he never painted when he was ill, almost never.
Yeah.
He would stop painting for long periods of illness and then start again when he started to feel better.
I wonder whether, knowing all the things we do, whether folklore or art history, nuanced art history and history, whether we can stand back from Van Gogh's work and appreciate it afresh, I suppose, you know, without reading the notes on the gallery wall, without any sort of curatorial didacticism, whether we can actually just stand back and marvel at the beauty, at the technique. Is it possible to do that again? Is it possible not to unlearn what we know, but to actually look at these things without kind of wondering if he was nuts or something while he did this particular thing? Because when you're a kid, you look at these things, you just think they're wonderful. But someone will immediately tell you that, well, he was nuts when he did those crazy, cut his ear off, you know, and then that infects everything you know about him, doesn't it?
It's true, it does. But I think when you do just stand in front of any given one of his pictures, let's say the portrait of Dr. Felix Rey, who helped him a great deal, or, you know, still life with a plate of onions, you kind of look at them. It's actually, if you give them more than kind of 3 or 4 seconds, you really do just find yourself struck by the kind of beauty and expression of them. I think they're quite they do transcend the stories, I think, as long as you stand in front of them for a sufficient number of seconds. Interesting thing about this show, of course, that is separate to that, which is that it does clear up quite a lot about what actually happened and how much of his ear he did remove, and it's got what they think might have been the revolver and so forth. So they do kind of, they take all that stuff into account and just try and make it a bit more factual and a bit less of a myth.
Yeah, and it, still, I suppose, just finally on this one, it's called On the Verge of Insanity. Mm. It's a bit of a leading question, isn't it? It's a bit of a leading kind of title for an exhibition.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're not shying away from it.
Quite good.
Yeah.
As an exhibition name. That is called On the Verge of Insanity. As previously discussed, it's on the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam until the 25th of September. Nancy Durrant turns her eye, finally, to Wilfredo Lam at Tate Modern. An interesting time to be showing this Cuban artist. My kind of first catch-all for him is what wonderful modernism, shapes of Picasso in there, things that we might be familiar with, but actually quite an unfamiliar artist to many people.
Yeah, I think in this, he's actually incredibly well known across Europe, across continental Europe and in America. But he travelled an awful lot during his life and he lived in an awful lot of different places. Well, one of the few places that he visited only once, I think, or twice, and very little was here. So we don't have a great deal of his stuff. There is one painting by Wilfredo Lam in a British collection, and that's in the Tate. There's a drawing as well, but you never see that. So I don't think people really know much about him, and I think people think perhaps, if they do know a bit, they think maybe he might be a protege of Picasso, or he might be a surrealist, or something like that. But actually, there are things like that in his work. There are little hints of all the different groups that he became friends with. He made a lot of friends. He was an incredibly sociable person.
Yeah. He had a great face. I watched a video on the Tate website. What a good-looking man. What an interesting-looking man.
The most amazing face.
Yeah.
And partly because he's part Afro-Cuban and part Chinese.
Yeah.
So he had this incredibly sort of smooth and beautiful, long, oval face, which you see, actually, in quite a lot of his work. It's recognisable even in a very stylized form.
Now there's a man that could go under the Veronica scanner and not break it.
Yeah, well, it might break it because he's so smooth. But yeah, he's really interesting. But actually, all of those influences, they're all in there. But actually, he was really very pioneering, and he made something really quite new and different, I think, at the time.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess is there a school of thought that there was a lot of, the Brits didn't like modernism in the 50s. Didn't like Picasso. We sniffed at all this stuff. We didn't buy enough of it for the nation. You know, there all this stuff ends up in private collections or in Spanish collections, French collections, American collections, national collections, I mean. There's this another great name that sort of slipped through the slightly stuffy net of art, national art acquisition.
I think it might be. And there are a couple of reasons for that. I think post-war Britain was quite sort of, as you say, quite sniffy about things that were going on in Europe, and quite quickly turned its eye to America, if at all, really. We were a bit parochial about it, honestly. And also, the fact that he was South American and therefore didn't really fit in anybody's boxes, I think also made it difficult for people.
You couldn't see a European canon coming out of his work and all this kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a very unique type of thing. I mean, the work that he did in Cuba after the war was, it's unlike anything you've ever seen. And I think that was just very difficult for people to think, oh, well, if we buy that, we could hang it between the X and the Y.
Right.
You know, it's not easy to place. And I spoke to curators, and for them, it's not an easy show to hang. But so that, you know, do it chronologically, that's the easiest way of doing it.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult to kind of fit him in, which is a good thing for an artist, except in terms of being acquired by major museums.
Yes, indeed. And just finally, on Wilfredo Lam, Nancy, what are we seeing here? Is this sculpture? Is this painting? Is this works on paper? Is this all sorts of stuff that I've brought up? How, what are we looking at?
It's mostly painting. There is drawing, there is sculpture, there are some fantastic ceramics towards the end, where he spent some time in Italy. And they're really massive, kind of scumbled, extraordinary, weird things. But it's mostly painting, mostly largish scale as it moves on, oil painting in the most sort of beautiful, seemingly pastel but actually incredibly intense colours. It's really quite something.
Well, it sounds beautiful. It's Wilfredo Lam. It's opening at the Tate Modern this Wednesday, the 14th of September, and it's going to be on until early January. That is your hit of beautiful autumn colour all the way through to the winter at Tate Modern here in London. Before that, Nancy talks to On the Verge of Insanity, and we kicked off with the Veronica Scanner, which Nancy assures us, well, she's one of the great and good that's tested it out. And very beautiful, of course, it looks too. I want to get in line for that. That sounds good, if creepy.
Yeah, well, if you can book in for the Waddesdon Manor.
Yeah, well, exactly. Get up to the manor. Nancy Durrant, how lovely talking to you. Thank you very much
for talking
us through your art hits of the next couple of months. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bounds. My producer was Holly Fisher, and my researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll be talking music. But for the time being, from me, Robert Bounds, thanks for tuning in.